going to speak a little bit about the main theme of Rosh Hashanah is Malchios, Zichronos, and Shofros. According to some opinions, not the way we paskin, according to some opinions, every Shmoneh Esrei, you say Malchios, Zichronos, and Shofros. Our halacha, the way we paskin, is only to say the Musaf. That's the longest Shmoneh Esrei of the year, the Musaf of Rosh Hashanah. It has nine brachas, really 10 parts, but 9 separate brachas. And the extra brachas are called Malchios, Zichronos, and Shofros. On a regular weekday, there are 19 brachas, 3 in the beginning, 3 in the end, those are standard, and 13 in the middle. On a Shabbos and Yom Tov, regular Shabbos and Yom Tov. So there are 7 brachas, 3 in the beginning, 3 in the end, and 1 that usually ends either Mekadosh HaShabbos or Mekadosh Yisrael Vahazmanim. And Rosh Hashanah Musaf, there are altogether 9 brachas, which are really 10. There's that 7th bracha, in other words, the 3 in the beginning, 3 in the end are standard. Then there would be one bracha, which is like by Shacharis, a mincha. The bracha of Melech al-Kol Ha'aretz, Mekadosh Yisrael V'Yom HaZikaron. That's called Kedushas Hayom. So there would be 7 brachas. To that we add 3, but it doesn't come out to be 10 because we combine one of them, Malchios, with Kedushas Hayom. So we say Melech al-Kol Ha'aretz, Mekadosh Yisrael V'Yom HaZikaron. So it serves two purposes. It's Kedushas Hayom, Mekadosh Yisrael V'Yom HaZikaron, and Melech al-Kol Ha'aretz is Malchios. But really there's 10 parts and 9 separate brachas. Okay. Now the Mishnah seems to say that the purpose of Malchios, Zichronos, and Shofros, and the 9 brachas correspond to the 9 shemos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Chanos Tefillah, when she davened to the Ribono Shel Olam, thanking him for giving her a son. So she mentions the Ribono Shel Olam name 9 times, and those 9 brachas with 9 mentionings of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name correspond to the Tefillah of Chana, who was remembered on Rosh Hashanah also. Now, the Mishnah says like this, which gives a little bit of a hint to what the theme of Malchios, Zichronos, and Shofros. Malchios basically speaks about God being king. Zichronos is the fact that God remembers everything that happens. And Shofros speaks about the various times in history when the shofar was blown and will be blown. So basically what it is. And Malchios, Zichronos, and Shofros, the way we are minigis, we say 10 psukim. 10 psukim that have to do with Malchios, 10 psukim with Zichronos, and 10 psukim with Shofros, and 3 of them are from the Torah, 3 are from Ksuvim, and 3 from the Vim, in that order. And the reason why the order is changed from what normally we have Tanakh, and this is Tachan, there are many reasons given. One reason given is Malin Bakodesh V'lo Moridah. You want to say these psukim in ascending order, but you don't want to start with something other than the Torah. So you start with the highest Kedusha of the Torah, and then you go down to the lowest, which is Ksuvim, and then go back up again, so you're going up. And the last Pasuk, there's 3 from the Torah, 3 from Ksuvim, and 3 from the Vim. The last Pasuk is again from the Torah. So you go all the way up again. You start with the Torah to give the honor to the Torah over in the Vim and Ksuvim, and then you go down to the lowest level, Ksuvim. So you can go up again to the Vim and then to the Torah again. That's one reason. Another reason is that most of the psukim from Ksuvim are from Tehillim that predated the psukim from the Nevi'im. The psukim that are quoted from the Nevi'im are usually after David HaMelech, and the psukim from Ksuvim are usually from Tehillim, which are David HaMelech, so therefore we say them in chronological order, not in order of Hashivas. It's another reason why. Okay, that'll suffice for now. But that's the order of the things. 10 psukim, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, and 1 from the Torah in the end. And a bracha at the end with a little tefillah before it. That's for the bracha for Malchios, is like I said, Melech HaKoreres, Mekadosh Yisrael V'Yom HaZikaron, which combines Malchios and Kedushas Hayom. And the bracha on Zichronos is Zocher HaBris. And the bracha on Shofros is Shomea Kol Tzuras Amri Sober Rachamim. The what's the idea behind these things? So some say that Malchios represents, these three things represent the three basic fundamentals of Yiddishkeit. We'll be learning the 13 fundamentals. But the truth is that the Sefer HaIkarim says that you can boil them all down to three. And those three fundamentals are belief in God, and Hashgacha Hashem, that God not only exists, but he's involved in the world, and the Schar and Onesh, that there's reward and punishment. Those three things are the basic, and not the Schar and Onesh, the Schar and Onesh is part of Hashgacha, Torah, and the belief that the Torah is divine. So Malchios is belief in God, Zichronos is Hashgacha, Schar and Onesh, reward, punishment, the fact that God deals with the world, and Shofros has to do basically with the giving of the Torah, when the Shofar, that's the three psukim from the Torah, they speak about Shofar when the Torah was given. So those are the three fundamental basics of those of Malchus, Zichronos, and Shofros. I'll say a little bit differently what Malchus, Zichronos, and Shofros are, and we're not going to go into great detail, but in each one at least we'll give the basic idea, so when you say these psukim, you know what to think. What exactly it is. And do you think what I just told you before is also fine? Malchios is the fact. But the Mishnah says like this. The Mishnah says that on every Yom Tov, we bring the thing that we're being judged on. Every Yom Tov we're judged for something else. On Sukkot, we're judged for rainfall. On Pesach, for grain. On Shavuos, for fruit of the tree. And on Rosh Hashanah, we're judged for basically our lives. And therefore, every time we're judged, the Mishnah says, you bring from the product that you're being judged on as a sacrifice. So on Pesach, we bring the omer from the grain, from the barley. On Shavuos, we bring wheat, which has a connection to fruit of the tree. Right? How that is, not for now. But somehow, the simplest idea is that wheat used to grow on trees. Before the sin of Adam Arishon, wheat was a tree. That some say that the Eitz Hadas was wheat. And the Gemara says that in the future, bread will grow on trees. So wheat will again be a tree. That's the simplest way of understanding. So wheat, we drink from the wheat, which is basically the fruit of the tree. And on Sukkot, we pour water on the Mizbeah. The Sukkot is based on Shareva, Nisuch HaMayim. And therefore, what we're being judged on, we bring as a sacrifice. Part of it is a sacrifice in order that the Rebbe Shalom should bless the rest. So on Rosh Hashanah, what should we do with this? What should we do on Rosh Hashanah? Following this pattern, what we should do on Rosh Hashanah is bring ourselves as a sacrifice, because we're being judged for our lives. So when you're being judged for grain, you bring grain as a sacrifice. You're being judged for your life, you bring your life as a sacrifice. But that wouldn't let us celebrate too many Rosh Hashanahs. We had to bring ourselves a sacrifice, and if we had to bring somebody as a sacrifice for everybody else, also wouldn't be a fat guy's Rosh Hashanah too happy. So the Rebbe Shalom didn't ask us for human sacrifice. But it's true that there is a concept of sacrifice, human sacrifice, on Rosh Hashanah. First of all, the Akedah was on Rosh Hashanah, which is the closest to human sacrifice that we ever came. And secondly, there's a Medrash that says that all the other Tovim says v'ikraftemolah. You should sacrifice a burnt offering. On Rosh Hashanah it says v'asisemolah. Changes the terminology, and the word v'asisem can mean make yourself into a burnt offering. But it doesn't mean literally. You don't have to, you know, douse yourself with gasoline and go out with a flame on Rosh Hashanah. But the Mishnah says like this, over Rosh Hashanah, right? After you brought the water on Sukkot and the grain on Pesach and the fruit on Shavuos, over Rosh Hashanah, in you the Pranai, Malchios, Kadesh Tam Lichuni Aleichem, on Rosh Hashanah, say before me, the sentences of Malchios and the Bracha, in order that I should rule over you. Zichronos, Kadesh Yalit Zichronosechem Lefane Letova, Zichronos, in order that your memory should go before me for the good. Uvaneh the Shofar, and the vehicle for doing that is the Shofar. So it would seem to imply that that is the way of bringing ourselves a sacrifice. In other words, really the motif of Rosh Hashanah is bringing yourself as a sacrifice. But that the God doesn't want it literally, so he gave us a way to do it that's painless. And that is by saying Malchiyah Zichronus and Shofos. So the obvious question is, how does, by saying a bunch of sentences that have to do with God's kingdom and his remembrances and his and the shofar, how does that affect as if we brought ourselves a sacrifice? What's the connection? So I'll explain the following. First, in order to understand how it stands in the place of the sacrifice, understand what it is. What exactly is Malchios? What is Zichronos? What is Shofos? We'll try to cover as much of it tonight as we can. First, let's start with Malchios. Normally, people think that Malchios is what we call Kabbalah's Olmah Hushamayim. You accept upon yourself God's kingdom. Olmah Hushamayim, the yoke of God's kingdom, and that's Malchios. But that's very difficult to learn it like that for a few reasons. One is that we do that twice a day, every day. It's not so special about Rosh Hashanah. Kriya Shema. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, is Kabbalah's Olmah Hushamayim. When you say Kriya Shema, you're supposed to have in mind that I'm accepting God's kingdom upon myself, that I am obligated to listen to the Ribbono Shel Olam as a king. So we do that twice a day, every day, including Rosh Hashanah. So what's so special about saying the special Shmoneh Esrei that we should be able to have Kabbalah's Olmah Hushamayim? Beyond that, very strong proof that that can't be what Malchios is, because there's an argument in the Gemara whether the pasuk of Shema Yisrael can be used for Malchios or not. Shema Yisrael is the epitome of Kabbalah's Olmah Hushamayim. So if Malchios is Kabbalah's Olmah Hushamayim, there couldn't be an opinion that you couldn't use Shema Yisrael for Malchios, because that is what Malchios is. The fact that there is an opinion, we hold you could use it, but the fact that there's an opinion that says you can't seems to imply that Malchios is not Kabbalah's Olmah Hushamayim, something different. And therefore it's possible that Shema Yisrael doesn't reflect that, even though it reflects Kabbalah's Olmah Hushamayim. So what is Malchios? I was thinking that what the idea is about. That is, on the one hand, it says, Adonai Olam Hashem Malach, B'terem Kol Yitzir Nivra. The Ribbono Shel Olam ruled before anything was created. God was a king already. Yet, the Gemara says that on Friday, we say the Psalm of the day, the Shir Shel Yom, Hashem Molach Geus Lavesh, God rules. Now, he's dressed in majesty, or dressed in Geus, is, what's the word for Geus? He's dressed in haughtiness, to be able to translate. Whatever it is, majesty, dressed in majesty. So, why do we say that on Friday? Because on Friday, God finished creating the world, and he ruled over it. He became the king over the world. So the obvious question is, it says that God was a king before it was a world. How is God only the king on Friday? He was a king from before Sunday. So what happened between Sunday and Friday? That all of a sudden he had become king again. So I think the idea is the following. The Vilna Gaon distinguishes between a melech and a moshe. A melech is someone who rules because people want him to rule. They desire a king. That's a melech. A moshe is a tyrant. Tyrant, in colloquial usage, is a bad guy. But it doesn't mean, he doesn't have to be a bad guy. A tyrant just means someone who rules irrespective of the desires of the people. He could be a very good person. He could be a good tyrant. But he's not ruling because the people want him. He's ruling because he has the rule. So we say, Ki Lashem HaMalucha. God deserves to be a melech. Really deserves that everybody should accept him willingly. But Umosha Bagoyim. But Ramaisa, the Metzias is that he rules over the Goyim against their will. They don't want him. So he's a Moshe Bagoyim. But he's a melech on us, and he's right to be a melech in everything. And the word melech comes from the word nimlach, to ask advice, consent. Because a mere melech, you have to have consent. People have to want it. Right? That's why the Yetzirah, the Satan, nobody really wants the Yetzirah. Right? It fools you and think you want it. But deep down, nobody wants the Yetzirah. So the Yetzirah is called Memsheles Zatan. He's only a Memsheles, not a Malchus, not a melech. So in order for God to be a king, so he has to rule with consent. So before anything was created, there was nothing not to consent or consent. He was a king. Be'etzem, God was a king. Once there were things created, God couldn't be a king unless the things that he created consented, that they wanted to be the king. And since nothing has free choice, except for human beings, God couldn't be a king until he created human beings and they exercised their free choice to want God to be the king. So on Friday, Adam HaRishon was created, and he made a declaration, I want God to be my king. And that way he made God the king. That's different than Kabbalah's Ol Malchus Shamayim. Ol Malchus Shamayim means there's a fact, God is king. I have to now, right, respect his kingdom and accept his authority. But I'm not creating his authority. I'm accepting it. It's there. It's a fact. But Malchios is, I'm creating that fact. By saying that I want God to be my king, I'm making him the king. So in Rosh Hashanah, we make God king, and the rest of the year, after he's king already, we bow to his authority. But in Rosh Hashanah, by desiring him to be the king, then we have what? We'll find that same thing by your regular king. The Ramban says, the toast is an inyan that you should say, we want a king. You should come to the Sanhedrin, and the way the Torah describes how they will finally get a king, right? It says that when you come to Eretz Yisrael, to Amarta, you should say, Othimo Lainela. So the Ramban learns that that's one mitzvah. The mitzvah is to come to the Sanhedrin and to say, we want a king. We feel we need a king, we want a king. And then the Sanhedrin will pick a king, and then he becomes the king because you want him. Now he's not just a Moshe, he's a Melech, because the people said they want him. So you made him the king, that's the first mitzvah. Now that he's the king, Shom Tassimo Lecha Melech. Now you have to accept the authority of that king. So you make him a king by wanting him to be the king, and once he's the king, now you have to bow to his authority. So Rosh Hashanah is Malchios. Shetam Lichuni Aleichem. Doesn't say Shetakabel Malchusi Aleichem. Right? Kabbalah for Malchus Shamayim. God's Malchus exists. I now acquiesce to it. No. I create Tam Lichuni. You make me into a king on Rosh Hashanah. Every Rosh Hashanah is a throwback. It's an echo of that first Rosh Hashanah. What happened on the first Rosh Hashanah? Rosh Hashanah was Friday, the sixth day of creation. Because on Rosh Hashanah, the world wasn't created, man was created. The world was created 6 days early, on Chafayel. So Rosh Hashanah marks the creation of man. So when man was created, man, by desiring God, willing him to be the king, he made him a king. Which he wasn't from the time that the world was created till the sixth day. He wasn't a king because nothing accepted him with him. So even though he was a king before anything was created, when there was acceptance one way or the other, then he was a king. But once there's something, unless that thing accepts him willingly, he's not a king anymore. So Rosh Hashanah, we every year, for that year, make God the king. We come and we say, we want you to be our king. So the whole idea of Melech HaKol HaOretz, it's the coronation of the king, literally. We're coronating the king for another year. Every year is a new start. So what happened the year before is irrelevant to a certain degree. So I'm starting a new leaf, and I have to come on Rosh Hashanah and say, Rebbeinu, we want you to be our king. Now, why tackle we need a king altogether? Why would people want a king? So basically, a king has three functions. Now, first of all, before I just give a place in the davening, you see this idea, right? That there's a difference between Kabbalah's Ol Malchus Shamayim and coronating the Rebbeinu as a king. First, you make him a king. Then once he's a king, you accept his authority. Okay? By the Malachim, the same thing. Every day, the Malachim create anew God's kingdom, and then they accept the authority. It says, the Chulam, what's it called? Umaritim, Umavidishim, Umamlichim. The angels are what's it called? They sanctify God, and they coronate him, Mamlichim. And then it says, V'chula v'kabla malayim, Ol Malchus Shamayim. They accept upon themselves the yoke of God's kingdom. We just said it, Mamlichim. The Mamlichim is first, they say, we want you to be our king. So that makes God king. And then, once he's the king, then v'kabla malayim, Ol Malchus Shamayim. Then they accept the yoke of that kingdom. But the kingdom already exists, but you have to make the kingdom first. That's the purpose of a king. So there are basically three functions that a king serves. One function is that a king is one who gives advice. Melech, as we say, comes from a nimlach, to advise. So it has the idea of consent, but it has the idea of advice also. Kings give advice, and that respect, not just advice in words, but they give anasa to the people. We find in Brachos that David HaMelech, one of his functions was to see to it the Jewish people had parnasa, to make sure there's an economy. One reason for a ruler, right, for a government, or here the king is the government. He's a judge, right, and he advises people, right, into how they best can fit into the kingdom and do their part and get their benefits from the kingdom. That's one benefit of a king. Second benefit is that the king unites everybody. The king is like the heart of the people. Everybody unites around him. They have one common purpose, one common leader, right, and therefore there's unity. That's another purpose. Vayehi b'shul melech b'tzafet rosh yom yachad shifte Yisrael. When there's a melech, everybody gathers around him and has one common purpose, and then there's achdus. So that's another purpose of a king. And the last purpose of the king is that he fights wars. He protects his subjects. Right? He has an army, he has strength, he's able to protect them and will fight their battles if necessary. That is the three functions of the king, which Rambam delineates in the beginning of Hilchos Melachim. If that's the case, so the same thing goes with the Ribono Shel Olam. We need the Ribono Shel Olam as a king for three reasons. One is we need his advice. We need him to support us, to advise us how to use the support that he's giving us towards the betterment of ourselves and the whole kingdom. And even though people may say, well, God hasn't advised me recently, that's not really true. Every time you learn something from the Torah, God's speaking to you through the Torah. And the advice he gives us, an ongoing advice through the Torah. So by learning Torah, by listening to people who teach us Torah, we are getting advice from the Ribono Shel Olam, aside from the fact that the Ribono Shel Olam provides for us already. That's the first thing. The second thing is, the Ribono Shel Olam is obviously that one power that unites everything in the world into one unity. That's Achdus Hashem. And lastly, God is the one who fights our battles. Not only does he fight our battles and protect us physically, but even spiritually he helps fight us our battles. But it says, even though HaKol Bidei Shamayim Chutz Miyirei Shamayim, that a person has to fight his Yetzer Hara on his own, and God is not going to do it for you, but he'll know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ozro Eino Yochel. If God wouldn't help us fight our Yetzer Hara, we couldn't persevere. So we have to take the first step. Right. You open a pinhole, and the Rosh says, I'll help you. You have the initial desire, you make the initial attempt, God will come in with the cavalry, and he'll make sure that you're successful. So, even in fighting our Yetzer Hara, spiritual battles, we need the Ribono Shel Olam to help fight. We have to make the first step. When it comes to physical things, we need a certain amount of establish also. But the Ribono Shel Olam ultimately is the one who is lo b'chayav, lo b'koach, and eilu b'rechav, eilu b'asusim. But the Ribono Shel Olam is the one who's Hashem ha-melchom. So that is the idea of Malchus. So a person has to come on Rosh Hashanah, and he has to basically say, Ribono Shel Olam, we're starting another year. The Bria is like starting new, a new leaf is being opened, new chapter in history, and we're starting again, and personally, and as a nation, we'd like you to be our king. We need you as a king for all the reasons we mentioned. And each person should think to themselves why they benefit from having the Ribono Shel Olam as being their king. And the psukim, if you look at the psukim, they reflect this idea. Some of the psukim represent God as a provider, as an advisor. Some represent the Ribono Shel Olam as a unifier, and some represent the Ribono Shel Olam as a protector. Those are the three basic ideas that are in these various psukim. So that is Malchios. What is Zichronos? Let me just mention what it's not, and then we'll see what it is. Sichronos is usually translated that we want God to remember the good things about us. Right? But it doesn't say that. It doesn't say, Zichronos today, Shialu, Zichronoseichem Atovos Lefona. Your good memory should go before me. It doesn't say that. It says, Shialu, Zichronoseichem Lefona, Letovon. Your memory should go before me for the good. Sounds like all the memories should be for the good, but that can't be, because there's a lot of bad memories too. A lot of things we don't do right. So how could we ever imagine that all of our memories should go before the Rosh and lift over for the good? Right? It's impossible. There's a lot of memories that by nature that are not good. So what does it mean? She always is wrong. So the fun I lift over.
So the Muslim has nothing to do with that.
Nothing to do with?
I remember ours of all
the good or bad, whatever. Okay, but it has, what's it called? It has, the Pesukim do speak about the fact that the Rabbeinu Shel Olam remembers and judges or whatever, and is Mashgiach in the world. Right, okay. But it doesn't mean that it's going up for good or whatever, right. That prod is not there, Bechlau. Beyond that, the whole concept of remembrance by the Rabbeinu Shel Olam doesn't apply. How does a Russian remember anything? Remembering means you could forget it. Time has passed. But you remember it, right? The Rebbe Shalom never forgets. Everything is just as fresh. There's no time, right? The Or Sameach once said that in Dvinsk, where the Or Sameach, the Ner Simcha in Dvinsk, was the Rav, so there was a Hasidish Rav there too. He was the Rabbi Chov, the Israel Rosen. Yosef Rosen. So he what's it called, the Ragachover had a phenomenal memory, and phenomenal everything was his, and he was a genius, super genius. So in fact, they tell you he was a bigger genius than Einstein. The people who knew both of them, right? And in any case, so they said the Ragachover has a phenomenal memory. Right, he remembers it. So the Rosh Hashanah is a phenomenal memory. He has a shot, right? He takes a trip to the nearest town. On the way there, he has half a shot. On the way back, he has the other half. Right? What kind of memory you get there? Right? If everything is, you're constantly viewing it, it's in front of you, but you don't have a good memory. Then you remember to remember things that are not fresh in your mind. So by the Rabbeinu Shem, there's no such thing as memory. Everything is always fresh in his mind. That's why it says by Yitzchak, it doesn't say that the Rebbeinu Shem remembers Yitzchak. It says, V'zacharti was Brisi Avram, right? V'atas Brisi Yitzchak, V'atas Brisi Avram, V'zacharti is Brisi Yaakov, V'atas Brisi Yitzchak, V'atas Brisi Avram is called. So the word Zechira, remembrance, is used by Avram and by Yaakov, but not by Yitzchak. It doesn't say the word Zechira by Yitzchak. It says, V'atas Yitzchak, also Yitzchak, but it doesn't say remember. So the Gemara says, why not? Because after Shal Yitzchak shovel upon him. Because Yitzchak Avinu, even though he wasn't sacrificed, but God considered as if he was. And especially the ayah that Avram Avinu, you, the ram that he sacrificed, was just to be sacrificed Yitzchak. So the ashes of the ram are there in front of the Rebbeinu Shem. There's nothing to remember. It's there. There's nothing to remember. Remember it. It's there in front of you. It's fresh. Remember it's only something that's not fresh. So how do we before mention that the Rebbeinu Shem remembers anything? The whole concept of remembering by the Rebbeinu Shem doesn't exist. So just to finish off with the ideas, and next week we'll go into detail about it, and finish up Zichronos and Shochros, and show how it then, so back to take them, what are we supposed to do on Rosh Hashanah in general, using this as the stepping stone to making ourselves feel like sacrifices. The idea of Zichronos will be the following. There's two kinds of memory. Two kinds of remembering, right? Or two kinds of forgetting, and then converse, remembering, right? If I said something, and a year later you forget it, that's one kind of forgetting. But sometimes, let's say I say something, and you ask me, what did you say? And I say, no, forget it. What does that mean, forget it? You should sit here for the next 15 minutes trying to get out of your mind? You didn't hear it. How can you forget it? Now, you're asking me to say what I said because you didn't hear it, and I tell you, forget it. So what does that forget it mean? It doesn't mean take it out of your mind. It means discount it. Ignore it. It's not important. Just ignore it. Right? That's another way to forget it. Forgetting doesn't mean you knew something and you forgot it. Forgetting can mean you just ignored it to begin with. That's also called forgetting. If that's the case, it says in the Medrash that before Adam HaRishon was created, God asked the angels, should he create man or not? And the Medrash says, what was the angel's response? Mo'emosh ki tithkarenu. What's man that you should remember? So it's really difficult. This is before man was created. You can't remember something that doesn't exist. So what was their answer? What's man that you should remember him? That's good after man was created, but not before. But the idea is the second kind. As the angel said, forget it. Not important. Don't consider it. Not important enough to even consider. Just ignore it. Don't create him. So the angels, when they said, what's man that you should remember him then? What's man you should consider it? That you shouldn't ignore it. Just ignore him. Not important. The Rabbanu Shalom on Rosh Hashanah created man. Despite what the angel said. That means that man is important to consider. But he's important enough to not ignore him. So that's what Zichronos is. Zichronos means that on Rosh Hashanah we recognize that man is important. He's not to be discounted and not important and ignored, right, and not considered. He's something to consider. So that's the idea of Zichronos. How it fits into Shiyalu Zichronoseichem Lefanai L'Tova, and what exactly that entails, that we'll get to in the session.